From the Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Tuesday, December 10th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
Hey there yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. With all of that, what more could you want, right? Okay, let's get things started officially with
the Daily Datagram.
You got it. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or noggin nuggets. You get to make the call. It says here, artichokes are like humans. You have to go through so much to get to the heart. And it's true, you know. It's true. Or as one woman I heard put it, to get to a man's heart, you have to go through the sternum.
Well, if that is the worst thing that happens today, I'll be thrilled.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Here we go.
Gather round, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Darn too.
Some cool, some not so cool.
Why?
Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
Yes, you do.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, right. Oh, you're going to be so quizzed. Not. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1906, President Theodore Teddy Roosevelt was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his role in the mediation of the Russo-Japanese War, becoming the first American to win a Nobel Prize in any field, reinforcing the old verse, blessed are the peacemakers, right? And it was on this day in 1984, the United Nations General Assembly recognized the Convention Against Torture. And why not? Most UN General Assembly meetings are a form of convention of torture on their own. If you've ever witnessed a UN meeting, you'd know exactly what I mean.
Don't look now, but there's one man too many in this room, and I think it's you.
There was a very interesting segment Friday night on the Fox News Channel with Jesse Waters. The lovely and very talented Alina Habba, well, she's now an advisor to Donald Trump. As you know, she was one of his big attorneys when they were prosecuting him on, what was it, 34 felony counts? This lady is not to be trifled with. Well, she was on with Jesse Waters Friday night and had some interesting insights as to this bizarre pardon frenzy that Joe Biden is engaging in. The key word in a lot of these stories about the pardons is preemptive. Preemptive pardons. And some speculation. Maybe a lot of it's not as speculative as we think, but a lot of speculation as to who is on the list for these pardons.
Trump already president. Biden's admitted kind of admission by omission that he's president. He doesn't seem to care that Donald Trump is running the country. What do you make of that?
I think he was asleep, wasn't he, in his last meeting, and his hair was all jostled. What do I make of that? Well, I mean, he's been asleep at the wheel, as you know, for the last 3.5 years. He put, you know, the switcheroo with Kamala didn't work out so well. So now he's effectively happy as can be. I've never seen him smile so much. And he's saying, my hands are off, everybody. I'm still sitting here handing out pardons like they're Tic Tacs. And then we'll be done. And President Trump will be in, but at least I'll have protected my own. It looks like that's the lame duck kind of situation that we have going on. But
handing out pardons and Tic Tacs and cash. Pardons, Tic Tacs, and cash.
Yeah, and cash.
And right. And the rest of the bureaucracy is having, like, having orgies, and they're in the bubble bath at work, as they say. You heard Binder say that Joe Biden, was he wrestling with this pardon? Do you believe there was a lot of wrestling with the idea of pardoning your son?
No, and I guarantee you, and you can quote me on this, I'll come on your show when it happens, he's going to pardon himself, he's going to pardon his family, Shifty Schiff, Nancy Pelosi, and anybody else who had their hands in the cookie jar. I do not doubt it. So all we're hearing is leaks of something we already knew. They lied to us during the election, the American people saw through it, and now here we are. Pardon after pardon will be handed out, and I assure you of that. Listen, KJP is admitting it. More are to come, but it's going to be rocking the nation when we see who it is that he pardons.
We're liking the cabinet. People are intrigued by it, the way they're rolling it out, and also the personalities. It looks like you have one group that are, let's just say they're well-to-do, and they've been very successful, and they're looking to take this country into the next almost millennium when you think about the kind of things they're getting their hands on. And then you have another crew. You can call them the Crusaders. They're going to go in there and they're going to knock some heads together and they're going to bring out all of the scallywags and the evildoers to make sure we have a clean government again. Do you kind of see that, the way he's positioned his team?
It's absolutely what it is. If you look at the fact that we have billionaires who have created companies now helping to clean up a bad economy, clean up a government where we don't have efficient spending, and run the country like they run their businesses, much like Donald Trump. That's why he's a billionaire. And then you have the other side, the Cash Patels, the Pete Hegsets, the people that they're hitting hard because they know they're going to come in, fire you, clean up, and make you be accountable. And that's where the pardons come in. But I can tell you, Donald Trump and his entire cabinet and team are going to clean up America so fast, our heads will be spinning, and it will be the best thing that's ever happened to our country. He has a lot of work to do, but he's already working. And that's the truth. And like you said, Joe's asleep at the wheel already.
So, you've been down there in Mar-a-Lago. We are hearing that Elon Musk has been staying at a villa. It's been very hard to have him leave the property, although he did get sent to D.C. yesterday to make sure Doge is underway. What's the vibe down there right now?
It's amazing. It really is like a mini White House when you walk in, and the transition team and now the cabinet and his loyal supporters, they're all there working on how we're going to fix America. They're starting to, you know, have their team figure out what they need to do when they go in. They're strategizing. There's meetings literally all day. And yes, Elon is there and he's lovely. And with his son, little Axie, he's just the cutest. But, you know, it's a good energy. The truth is, he's not waiting until January 20th. He said this before. I will do more between November 5th and January 20th than Joe Biden has done in 3.5 years. And if you look at the results that have happened in other countries, the tariff threatening, what happened with that, the people that have visited us, Zuckerberg at Mar-a-Lago sitting next to me the other evening, Trudeau. These people are coming because they realize the man is in charge. He is not asleep and he's going to shake things up.
What did Zuckerberg want? He went down there to have dinner?
He went down there. Who knows what he wanted?
Everyone's down there now.
Yeah, and to be sure, Donald Trump is already on the job. He has been meeting with foreign dignitaries. He's been issuing statements. He issued a very important statement the other night regarding Syria. You know, hands off, let things play out. And really what's happening in the White House these days is apparently Joe Biden is, if he's acting at all, he's acting in a very measured manner, almost out of deference to President Trump. And I'm going to refer to him as President Trump because that's proper. He was a president before. He's going to be president again. Let's just cut to the chase and call him President Trump. Besides, it sounds better. I haven't felt this good since 1980 and 1984. You know, I think we're already there. When you look at the fact that Pete Hegseth is going to be confirmed, that is pretty much a foregone conclusion as of today. Pete Hegseth will be confirmed, and he's going to be good for the Pentagon. He's going to be very good for the Pentagon. Will be interesting to see if one of the people, because he wasn't mentioned in that segment with Jesse Waters and Alina Habba, but it would be interesting to see if General Mark Milley is going to be pardoned. I'm betting he will be. I can almost assure you this. Milley needs a pardon if he's going to stay out of jail. Pretty obvious Donald Trump is already large and in charge, and I guess the inauguration is just going to be a formality on January 20th. Okay. I'm okay with that. I mean, because, gee whiz, these days, there's only one thing that Joe Biden's able to do, and that's hand out these pardons. What was the analogy? Like Tic Tacs? Mm-hmm. So, and he's doing that between naps. So, may as well have the adults in the room take charge. And they are. I mean, they're putting all the little ducks in a row, and come January 20th, when it's official, President Trump is going to be on the job. And I love the term, large and in charge. Well, I don't know if you saw this Sunday, but it was a Meet the Press interview. Kristen Welker, who's the host of the show, hostess of the show. Are you even allowed to say hostess anymore? Is that offensive when it comes to gender? Well, anyhow, she hosted the show, as she always does. Again, kind of antagonistically, asking him questions that never would have been asked a Democrat, I can tell you that. But anyhow, Trump took a pretty firm stance on immigration reform, and I love the emphasis. The emphasis was on his plans to address systemic issues in the U.S. immigration system, key among which was ending birthright citizenship.
You've promised to end birthright citizenship on day one. Is that still your plan?
Yeah, absolutely.
The 14th Amendment, though, says that, quote, all persons born in the United States are citizens. Can you get around the 14th Amendment with an executive action?
Well, we're going to have to get a change. We maybe have to go back to the people, but we have to end it. We're the only country that has it.
Through an executive action?
You know, we're the only country that has it. Do you know, if somebody sets a foot, just a foot, 1 foot, you don't need to, on our land, congratulations, you are now a citizen of the United States of America. Yes, we're going to end that because it's ridiculous.
Through executive action?
If we can, through executive action. I was going to do it through executive action, but then we had to fix COVID first, to be honest with you. We have to end it.
As admirable as that may seem, and, really, this should have been done a long time ago, because when it originally was enacted, we were trying to populate the country. I don't think populating the country now is a problem anymore. So you need to understand that the path to this, the path to ending birthright citizenship, is going to involve a lot of big legal battles. Now, you've got the opposition who are going to oppose it just because that's what they do. They don't care what it is. They're against it. It's kind of like that. Was that Duck Soup with the Marx Brothers? And there was a song in there, whatever it is, I'm against it. It was hilarious. But this is what we're facing. Opposition just for the sake of opposition. And while Trump suggested that he might attempt an executive action, he acknowledged that a legislative or judicial solution could provide the permanence necessary to secure this kind of reform. You know, tackling the dreamer dilemma. But this birthright citizenship is not doing this country any good. In an appearance on CNN back on Sunday, Senator Mark Wayne Mullen confirmed that no Senate Republicans are against Pete Hegseth. There have been no votes from Republican senators, according to him. He was on CNN with Jake Tapper, and this is what he had to say.
I think Pete's doing exactly what he needs to do. He's on Capitol Hill. He's speaking with senators. There's been absolutely no no's from Republican senators at this point. He continues to make his case, and his case is something that when he sits down with you, he's able to articulate very well. I think Pete will make an outstanding Secretary of Defense, and I believe that he's going through the process. Now, he has an uphill battle. But he's taken the fight straight to Capitol Hill like he should. He's going to have a hearing in Senate Armed Services. He'll have to answer 12 tough questions, and I believe he'll be able to answer every one of them. At the end of the day, I believe Pete will be our next Secretary of Defense, and he'll be perfect for the role. I mean, right now we've had Secretary Austin. Secretary Austin is a general in the Army. He has been a disaster. We have low morale. The only reason why we are even kind of close to having some type of recruiting numbers is because he's lowered the threshold, but we're nowhere near where we should be or where the previous threshold for recruitment should be, because people aren't wanting to fight for Secretary Austin. You have Pete, who is a combat veteran, 2 Bronze Stars. He was a major in the Army. He's been in the public sector. He'll go there and make the changes in the Defense Department that needs to take place. And I think he's exactly the one we need, which is why I believe he will get confirmed at the end of the day.
See, where the mainstream media is concerned, they have been pushing this allegation that Pete has a drinking problem. And they did quite a smear job on Pete last week, but quite a few of Pete's former colleagues at the Fox News Channel came forward in a very public manner and quashed all of that crap, that bullcorn. And Mullen told Tapper, he says, if Pete did have a drinking problem, that would be obvious. But to make something out of it that isn't there just because he's going through Secretary of Defense, the media should be ashamed of themselves. Well, here's the thing about media. The mainstream media doesn't know shame. You can shame them over and over and over again on their very interviews. You can prove them wrong. You can even rub their nose in the pile of dirt they created, and they're still incapable of shame. They just pick up the ball and continue to run with that left-wing garbage they keep pushing. That is never going to end, my friend. If you think that after Donald Trump's resounding return to the White House, resounding because of the way that vote went, look at the red-blue map. Look at how that shook out in this election. If you think that the sniping on the part of the mainstream media is going to stop, you're only dreaming. If anything, they're going to ramp it up even more. The mainstream media will become even more antagonistic toward Donald Trump and his people. When you elect a new president, of course, there are all kinds of cabinet positions that need to be filled. Not all of them need confirmation by the legislature, but a good many of them do. And one of the areas that is of prime importance to most Americans these days, and this didn't used to be the case, is the commissioner of the Federal Communications Commission. Used to be the FCC, which has only been around since 1934. Used to be the FCC was just an agency that dealt with wireless communications, radio, and then later television, two-way radios, that sort of thing. They assigned frequencies so that people operating wireless stations didn't talk all over each other. And I'm surprised that it took them until 1934 to finally come up with the, first it was the Federal Radio Commission and then Federal Communications Commission. But we have one Brendan Carr, who is pretty darn sharp, and he is conservative, and he vows to dismantle social media's censorship cartel, as he calls it. So, can he change things? That's not really a hypothetical question. It's a question that needs to be asked. Can he change things? Because nowadays, with social media, everybody's involved with social media, even I am. You need to know where the FCC stands on certain issues. And of course, the biggest issue for conservatives has been the issue of censorship. Now, Carr, who's Trump's nominee for FCC chair, says that tackling social media companies' perceived censorship cartel is a high priority. Now, Carr plans to employ regulatory measures to disrupt what he sees as an unfair suppression of conservative voices by digital oligarchs. First one that comes to mind for me is Mark Zuckerberg, right? And, of course, until Elon Musk bought Twitter, there were the people over at Twitter. I mean, my God, Twitter was awful when it came to censorship. So Brendan Carr describes a recent unprecedented surge in social media censorship, deeming it essential to return to a landscape where diverse opinions thrive without bias or limitations. That's how he put it, and I thought that was pretty darn good. Now, he highlighted how these platforms independently censor content and succumb to pressure from advertising agencies and governments to control narratives. And I kind of understand this pressure from advertising, not just agencies, but advertisers directly. Being in the radio business all my life, I have seen on a number of occasions incidents where a certain sponsor would say, hey, you got this guy on the air who was talking about our car dealership. Well, they didn't mention us by name, but he was talking about car dealerships being clip joints. And immediately the program director goes to said air personality and says, stop talking about car dealerships being clip joints. We have a lot of car dealerships that spend a lot of money on the radio station, and your paycheck comes from advertising revenue. So you see how that works. And this isn't anything new. My God, this has been going on ever since the 1920s with the advent of radio. Before that, it was on newspapers, too. You know, editorials that would slap somebody's hand. Well, if they were a sponsor, you could pretty well bet they were going to cease advertising in that newspaper. So this push for more regulation is expected to create heated debate about free speech, the role of tech companies, and government intervention. Now, Brendan Carr, what I know of the man is he's a straightforward, straight-shooting, very intelligent guy. I've seen him on TV a couple of times, and he believes that revisiting Section 230, which provides tech companies the immunity for third-party content, could be the key to increasing free speech on social media platforms. Amen. I fully agree with this. Now, by reforming this provision, Mr. Carr argues that tech companies could be incentivized to allow more speech rather than restrict it. Conservatives argue that current moderation policies are very heavily biased against them. In fact, most of us conservatives, if you're really active on Facebook, for instance, at one point or another, you've already had the little red notation that has come across your Facebook wall from the editors at Facebook slapping your hand for something or just saying, you know, this isn't allowed or this goes against community standards. Bullcorn. So this furthers the need for regulatory revisions. And these proposals have generated some pretty robust discussions among lawmakers and tech insiders concerning the ethical responsibilities of technology firms. So the proposal to modify Section 230 engages with generally broader discussions on freedom of speech. You can't get any more basic than that. First Amendment. And of course, in that witch's brew, you have to talk about tech monopolies and how they're implicated in social and political discourse. Now, the conservative community has, for quite some time now, criticized the moderating policies of social media companies, saying that these practices show a clear bias against them. And they've made that point time and time and time again. You know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And the recent loss of a lawsuit by Republican attorneys general who claimed collusion between the Biden administration and social media companies underscores the legal complexities in even taking this on. The accusations of bias, they're always poo-pooed by the other side. And their lawyers beat up our lawyers. And the issue is going to remain contentious. It's contentious now. It'll be contentious till kingdom come. Because you've got opposing viewpoints expressing concerns about overregulation, stifling innovation, and a reckless approach to corporate freedom. And as Carr takes his position, the impact on social media governance and its effects on political discourse, of course, continues to unfold, potentially reshaping the digital communication landscape as we know it, which would be a good thing. My, how times have changed, even during my lifetime. You remember the name William Proxmire? If you were around in the 60s and 70s, you probably remember him and maybe even remember him quite well. He was a Democrat, and he was known as a maverick. He was the fellow who went after, and very aggressively too, by the way, went after wasteful government spending. And he was the man who invented the tongue-in-cheek Golden Fleece Award. And he awarded this to appropriations he found particularly egregious. And he was a member of the Senate Banking Committee, the Senate Appropriations Committee, and the Joint Economic Committee. That was the Democrat Party of years and years ago. Now, Mr. Proxmire was from Wisconsin, a good Midwesterner. And that's the kind of a Democrat Party I used to follow many, many years ago. That party no longer exists. It's the party, the Democrat Party of today isn't even a remnant of that party from so many years ago. Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I like, she's from the 14th District of Georgia. That's the upper northwest corner of Georgia, and she is terrific. She's a bit of a maverick herself. And she was on with Maria Bartiromo 2 weeks ago talking about her role as the overseer of this DOGE, D-O-G-E, you know, Department of Government Efficiency, that's going to be headed up by both Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy. So Maria Bartiromo asked her about this role.
Tell us what you see as the most government waste.
It's all over. Every single government department, program, grant programs, contracts, it is everywhere. And so when we look into a deep dive into this massive problem that's caused America to be $36 trillion in debt, we're going to have to go into all kinds of buckets. And that's how I'll be separating things on the Oversight Subcommittee on DOGE. We'll be looking at everything from government-funded media programs like NPR that spread nothing but Democrat propaganda. We'll be going into grant programs that fund things like sex apps in Malaysia, toilets in Africa, all kinds of programs that don't help the American people. I want to talk to the people at the Pentagon and ask them why they can't find billions of dollars every single year and why they fail their audit. But not just that, Maria. I'd like to talk to the governors of sanctuary states and the mayors of sanctuary cities and have them come before our committee and explain why they deserve federal dollars if they're going to harbor illegal criminal aliens in their states and their cities.
I particularly like her focus on government-funded media like NPR. Get rid of NPR. There's no reason why you and I should be paying our tax money to an organization that is nothing but a shill for the Democrat Party. And then, of course, these useless grant programs. You heard her. She's terrific. But just FYI, House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, you know him, Republican out of Kentucky, and MTG are going to chair the incoming Delivering on Government Efficiency House Oversight Subcommittee. Now, that's what DOGE stands for, is Delivering on Government Efficiency. It's not Department of Government Efficiency, Delivering on Government Efficiency. I don't know that that makes any difference. The idea is the same, right? And Comer has given the green light on the DOGE subcommittee, chaired by Green, in the next Congress, with plans to identify and investigate the waste, corruption, and absolutely useless parts of our federal government. Those are Ms. Green's words. Does that mean that they're going to have the power to shut things down? Don't know. But that's what really needs to happen. We need to shut things down. I mentioned William Proxmire earlier. I remember one Golden Fleece award that he had doled out back in the early 1970s. And that was a $20,000 federal study granted to a group to study why children fall off their tricycles. To the Comedy Corner. We're going to have some fun with Vien Pamachan.
School was weird for me. I had to take English as a second language classes. I struggled in these classes because I only spoke English. I wish that wasn't true. I went to a school with a bunch of immigrant kids. They didn't know what to do with me. The teachers are like, what do we do with the Asian kid who speaks English? Yeah, they decided, let's just put it with the others. So English is now my first and second language. I didn't complain. If you speak English, that class is really easy. Yeah, I got a C. Nailed it. My parents raised us American. I'm not very Asian at all. I don't even like going to Asian restaurants. Asian waiters don't like me. They can sense that I'm a traitor. My wife took me to this Vietnamese restaurant. We sit down, the Vietnamese guy comes by. I'm just like, hey, can I have a Coke? He was so rude, because he didn't work there. I don't know why I did this. This happens to every Asian person in an Asian restaurant. They think you were. It's happened to me before, okay? He was mad. He's like, why don't you get me a Coke? It became this really weird scene, like two Asian guys yelling at each other, like in a Vietnamese restaurant. It was like a weird, racist, friendly fire standoff. Everybody in the restaurant's looking at us now. I heard someone go, why are the waiters arguing? Is there going to be kung fu fighting? I'm from a big family. There was 10 of us. This is typical for Laotians. We have big families. Most of my friends are American. They all have two kids. They can't relate to this at all. They love and spoil those two kids. They're always like, how did your parents deal with 10 kids? Laotians deal with 10 kids the same way you guys deal with two. They love and spoil two of them. It's like a basketball team. There's two stars, right? Six kids are role players. They defend and rebound, and two kids never come off the bench. They're afraid you're going to trade him to another team.
Have a terrific Tuesday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's Bombastic Blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.